Hello, and welcome to Stories in Harmony. I'm your host, Laura Ferrero, a journalist, marketing strategist, and brand storyteller who helps artists and conscious entrepreneurs share their most powerful brand stories. Today, I am joined by Mel Nahas, co-founder of Conscious City Guide. Conscious City Guide is an online platform that produces, promotes, and tickets events for the conscious community. Full disclosure, they also used to be a client of mine. Offering everything from morning meditations to guided tea ceremonies and international retreats, Conscious City Guide is the go-to platform for conscious events that can't be found anywhere else. Born in Indonesia and raised in Australia, Mel came to LA to pursue a career in the music industry, but she ended up pivoting and embarking on a mission to expand consciousness through curated events and experiences. During our conversation, Mel shares about her entrepreneurial journey and challenges that she has encountered and overcome along the way. She also tells us how she uses tea ceremonies to connect with her inner compass and guidance. And she tells us about a recent trip that was life-changing for her that she took to Egypt that was filled with a lot of incredible and amazing synchronicities. We talk about this and a whole lot more, so sit back and enjoy my conversation with Mel Nahas. So I'm here with Mel Nahas at her beautiful home tea area that just feels wonderful. Thank you so much for having us today.
You're so welcome. Thank you for coming out here.
Yeah, it's a beautiful drive. So Mel, it's so interesting. I was trying to pinpoint how I initially, you know, how we initially met, and I know part of it is through Conscious City Guide. We did a little bit of work together. And then I think through the Water Tiger meditation kind of healing community too.
Yeah.
And not through music, even though we both come from a music background.
Yeah.
So it's fun to connect with you not through music.
Yeah. It's wild how the connective threads always tune and align back to those that you are meant to meet. And music is one of those strongest threads for me. I always have these music connections, and it's really inspiring the way they come back.
Yeah, likewise. Yeah. So many of my closest friends and even my husband, I all met through music.
Wow. So we share that. That's so special.
Yeah. It really is. And through your wonderful company, Conscious City Guide, I recently attended the Mercado Sagrado Market in the Malibu Canyon, one of many events that you produce and ticket. And so I'd love to talk about what made you transition from the music industry to co-founding Conscious City Guide.
Yeah. Well, I was in the music industry for over a decade, but I would say that I really started when I was 14. You know, I found a band when I was in high school that I absolutely loved, and I started managing them.
Oh, do you want to share their name?
They were called Jethro at the time, and I don't know what they've ended up changing their name to, I forget, but it was just born from this absolute adoration and love from the music that they were making, and I wanted to help them. That's really kicked off my music career. And then I worked in music television. I managed a record label for Levi's Jeans. I worked at big festivals, Big Day Out and Splendor in the Grass in Australia. Wow. I worked for our version of the Grammys, the Australian Record Industry Awards, called the ARIAs. So I had many, I was exposed to many faces of the music industry, and I had an insanely fun, fast life over that decade plus. And as I was starting to, I guess, mature and come into adulthood, although I still think I'm slightly stuck in the phase of, what do they call it when a kidult or whatever?
Oh, kidult. I like that.
I think I'm still a bit of a kidult. But as I started to mature and kind of also look for a more balanced lifestyle, because I was, you know, in that rock and roll lifestyle for sure, especially when I was touring and working with artists more closely. And I was just looking for community and a balance, and I couldn't find it. So that's really how I transitioned to what I was doing, because I was seeking, and I didn't even know back then, or I hadn't had the experience of a sound bath or Reiki or even meditation. I had done yoga with my mom growing up, but besides that, really, I didn't have a community who was making space to connect with themselves, which in turn, once you've created that space, I believe you have a realization of how connected you are to each other and community and the planet. So I guess without the music industry and the lifestyle that I led at that time, I would have never founded Conscious City Guide, because it was really born off this community I was seeking myself.
Wow. And was that a difficult leap to Conscious City Guide, or did the stars kind of align?
It really was. For me, it was only something that I realized in retrospect, that my higher self was overseeing and directing everything to align to the point of creating Conscious City Guide. So I didn't know why, but while I was working in music, I started a blog, and that was at the height of fashion blogs. And, you know, I loved reading and consuming those style of fashion blogs at the time. And but there were no blogs around conscious lifestyle and wellness at the time. So I just started seeking out people that inspired me, who were living consciously, and started a blog about them. And I had no idea or plans, I guess, to say, to turn that blog into a business. But unbeknownst to me, by creating this blog, and slowly I was putting together this network and community of people leading this lifestyle. And then when I decided to leave the music industry, actually two of the first people that I featured on the blog was Julie Piat and Rich Roll, which is Julie runs Water Tiger, which is part of how we met. And pretty much everyone I had featured on that blog at the time became friends of some sort. And Rich and Julie were very, very close friends before I'd even moved from Australia to LA.
Oh, wow.
So I'd featured them on the blog before I moved to LA. And so we were friends, and when I decided to leave the music industry, I called up Julie and I said, hey, that retreat that you and Rich have been talking about doing, you're going to need someone to organize it. I need to leave the music industry and I'm going to need to pay the bill somehow. Why don't I help you organize that retreat? And they really were the bridge in helping me do that, because they just said yes. And within 4 months, we had sold out our first retreat in Italy with Plant Power Way Italia.
That's amazing, Mel. I always wondered how you came together initially. And that is, I mean, what a beautiful way to start your Conscious City Guide journey. And I imagine your move from Australia to Los Angeles.
Yeah. Well, we initially met through a music friend.
Oh,
so coming back to the music thread, mutual friend of both of ours. He's Australian. I was his producer on a music television show in Australia. His name's Osher Ginsberg, or back then he was known as Andrew G. And he used to ride the mountains here with Rich. And when he knew I was doing the blog, he said, you have to meet Rich and Julie. And that's how we got connected.
Yeah, that's incredible. I have to confess, and I've actually talked about this before on my show, but Rich Roll's podcast is such an inspiration for mine, you know, just beautiful. Hearing the in-depth conversations that he has with such incredible people. I've learned so much. It helped keep me sane during the pandemic, hiking the hills behind my house when I wasn't seeing many people, just kind of hearing all the wisdom shared on the show.
Yeah, he does such a great job, and he inspires many, many souls across the world.
I know. And of course, Julian, Srimati as well. Yeah. So much love for them.
Me too.
And so I've heard you speak a little bit about this before, but in terms of, it does sound like it was very much a natural evolution from your blog to producing Plant Power Way Italia. And then in terms of turning it into a business, it seems like you were following kind of your higher path.
Yeah.
And can you explain how that transition worked from just doing one event to the foundations of a business?
Yeah. like I mentioned with the blog, I had no idea and no plan to turn that into a business. But there was this little piece of the blog that I would send out once a week when I would put up a new profile of whoever I interviewed that week. And underneath that email, it had a little section on the email called Conscious City Guide. And it was a collection of events that I had scoured the internet for, or collected pieces of information from people along the way of conscious events happening around the world. And people really loved that piece of the email and would start emailing me events that they were putting on. So when I was grateful to produce that first retreat with Rich Roll and Julie, I was thinking, okay, now what next? And it was that piece in the email that I was like, I could see it. I saw, all the experience and what I've done in the music industry, that's the piece, Conscious City Guide with the events, that I could potentially turn into a business. And so one of the most magical stories of Conscious City Guide is how my co-founder Kiki Falconer and I met. And going back to the thread of music, we worked at the music television station together a decade before. She was in the creative graphic department and I was in production. And it was a huge building. So we were opposite sides of the building, not really friends, but knew each other. And when I moved to LA, I was walking out of Whole Foods in Venice and my head was stuck in my phone. And I bumped into her and we saw each other's faces and didn't even remember each other's names because a decade had passed. And I was like, Mel, I'm Mel. And she's like, Kiki. And we're like, oh my God, how are you? And so when I decided to turn Conscious City Guide into a business, really the universe brought together Kiki and I and reconnected us in the vortex that is Whole Foods Venice. It really is a vortex, I don't have any of the skills that Kiki has. And for me to bring this idea into the world, I needed someone who could make a beautiful newsletter, pull the ideas out of my head and visualize, get them out into the world in a visual context and make a website. And so that's how we really started Conscious City Guide together. And it was born from our connection from music, born from my experience of putting on large and small scale shows and tours, and having a tiny bit of knowledge of how to market and sell tickets and those sorts of things. So I think all the droplets that I had experienced in my music industry career along the way really just transferred over.
Wow, that really is incredible. And it sounds like, it's such a good synergy when two people who partner together have complementary skills rather than, the same skill set. And It sounds like that was just the perfect match with Kiki.
It is. And, you know, we're going on 7 years now of Conscious City Guide. And every day I just feel so blessed to have reconnected with Kiki in this lifetime. And she's just the greatest business partner. She really trusts that I know what I'm doing. And, you know, I trust her and know what she's doing. And in fact, I'm, you know, always encouraging her more. I'm like, I don't know. I trust what you're going to make out of this, out of this nonsensical stuff in my head. So we're super blessed to have each other.
That's wonderful. Yeah. And what are some of the offerings that you have going on right now that you're most excited about?
Well, I am most excited about the larger vision that we are creating with Conscious City Guide. And really, it's a next chapter and a next evolution. So Live Nation invested in our company in 2019. So again, there's that music situation.
I was going to ask you about that. And I do some copywriting for Live Nation.
Nice.
Right, Live Nation. Sorry, continue.
So having the support of such a huge global entertainment company such as Live Nation, who really see that consciousness is one of the ways that we can help evolve the consciousness of this planet is through experiences. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really stoked that Live Nation see that, because they have such a huge footprint and touch point to so many other people who might not be into meditation or yoga.
Yeah,
so we can just go through different ways, you know?
Yeah, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that they are the biggest concert ticketing agency in the world.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Sorry, I'm pouring tea.
It's very soothing.
So what was the question?
Oh, I was just commenting on Live Nation and you were telling me about the next evolution.
Oh yeah.
Of Conscious City Guide.
So I'm most excited about this next evolution and chapter of the company, because we are building out the platform to be the guide, like really leaning into our name, Conscious City Guide, right? And I see a guide as, not only is it a guide to conscious things to do in cities around the world, but it's a guide to consciousness and how to be conscious in a city.
Mel, can you tell me how you would define consciousness?
Yeah. Well, in the context of Conscious City Guide, because I have a few definitions of consciousness, but in the context of Conscious City Guide, it means for us anything that reconnects you to yourself, your community, and your planet. So really, and then the simple version of that is the experience of oneness. And what we believe in Conscious City Guide is so important. On top of that is what then is your participation and activation in that oneness to evolve that connection between each other and our environment.
That's beautiful. I guess you can be passive, but it's good to be involved as well.
Yeah.
And so what is the partnership with Live Nation? What form has that taken?
Initially it was funding.
Mm.
So we were able to grow the company quite a bit when they funded, and now it's continued partnership support in terms of connecting us with different festivals. We've programmed 2 stages at Bonnaroo Festival, one with Hayley Williams of Paramore.
Yeah.
She has this beautiful campground plaza there called Sanctuary of Self-Love, and it's all centered on mental health and wellness. So we work with Haley on programming that, and we program another campground plaza there called Shiru, which is a female and femme identifying safe campground. So it's really, the partnership really brings together and makes sure that we can sprinkle our curation and programming of conscious culture and lifestyle in these mainstream events. And I definitely want to do more and more of that, because it's Kiki and I's dream to make conscious culture as mainstream as music, fashion, art, dining, sports.
It's so needed, Mel.
Yeah.
I think that's quite beautiful. And can you share some of the challenges you faced on this journey and lessons that you've learned along the way in your entrepreneurial journey?
Yeah. How much time have we got?
All the time we need.
No, loads of challenges. The biggest recent lesson that I have is what a privilege it is to be able to be an entrepreneur. I don't think people talk about this enough. And essentially, when you have a vision and a dream that you're turning into a business, it can, and you're passionate about it, you throw yourself into it, and however your energy system runs is like, you know, I don't believe in the 24/7, you know, work thing, but if that's for you, that's super cool. But let's just say it's a 24/7. So you throw your passion and yourself into whatever it is that you're building. But where the privilege lays that I don't think is spoken about enough is that a lot of young people with these visions actually don't have the support to do it, because they've either got families, or financially they have to do another job, or they're supporting, you know, people. So there's a lot of ideas out there in the world that I think unfortunately don't get to see the light of day just because people have other commitments before them, right? And so in that respect, my biggest lesson right now is just how to use the privilege of, one, the access to the network that I have, and two, the, you know, it's not all glamour building a company. It's, you know.
No, far from it.
It's, right? Yeah. And to get funding is, and being a female founder as well, like the stats on funding female founders is
abysmal.
So all of those things, I'm really grateful that I've had the support of being able to have my family to support me in this journey, and also to have other jobs that kind of support it too, right, to pay my own bills. Which I just don't think many entrepreneurs or people that want to be have. So I guess the lesson there is, you know, and actually one of my advisors who built The Infatuation, you know, The Infatuation, it's the biggest food media guide in America. And he was telling me, yeah, he kept his job in the music industry, I think, for 8 years or 5 years while he was building the Infatuation. And it's a huge business now. And in some respects, I wish I had held on to a full-time job sooner to give me the stability, but I didn't. So the instability financially is also a huge lesson in the journey.
Yeah, tell me about that, because I've definitely experienced that as an entrepreneur, and it takes a certain, like, I don't think I have a thick skin, and I think it would be more, you know, very helpful to have more of a thick skin.
Yeah, thick skin, tenacity. And there's a fine line of, you know, jumping off the cliff, so they say, and going for your dream. And, you know, that's where I think, where I'm talking about being grateful for and using your any privileges that you have access to really acknowledge those things, right? Because we otherwise wouldn't be able to do them. And, you know, you still live in this 3D world. So you've got bills to pay and.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I applaud all entrepreneurs who are holding down full-time jobs while building out big dreams, because that's just the, you know, the truth of the matter in the first certainly few years, unless you get a ton of funding.
Likewise, or perhaps other part-time jobs that they cobble together while, you know, working on launching or getting their business off the ground or to a sustainable point. I know quite a few folks who do that.
Exactly. And that's, yeah, you know, that's part of the, I guess, another part of the lesson is just knowing that there is no shame in that.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially, yeah. I don't know, I feel like especially in a city like Los Angeles, where the cost of living is not.
Exactly.
Not cheap. And yeah. Yeah. So
yeah,
that's definitely. And is there any, because I know, Mel, you've been through quite a lot, you know, over the last almost a decade now since you started it. Is there anything else that you've taken on board during this journey that you want to share for someone who might be starting their own business or in the midst of it?
Yeah, don't follow any business how to build a business templates. Sorry if you got an MBA. No, because there is not one way to do it. And I really subscribe to the belief that, you know, there's 7 billion people on the planet or whatever it is. So that means there's 7 billion ways to build a business or, you know, cook a lasagna. and so really carving out that space for yourself to tune in and align with the ways that inspire you to make it happen. And, you know, my way is certainly not going to be anyone else's way. I still get weird looks all the time with the way that I make decisions, but, you know, I did it on and will continue to do it on my terms. And yes, I'm very grateful for all the support and the incredible advisors that I have, both seen physical advisors and unseen spiritual advisors, which are just as important as my physical advisors. One of them just sparked in that left crystal, actually. So yeah, there's no template, and just tune into yourself to figure out which way you're gonna do it. And a really great tool for me is really leaning into and learning about my human design.
Yeah.
Do you know anything about human design?
I do know a bit. I know that I am a manifest generator.
Manifesting generator.
Yeah.
Do you know your profile number?
I don't.
We should have looked at that before. But
maybe afterwards.
After I can do a look at your chart quickly. So human design, and for anyone listening, if you haven't delved into it before, the best website that I've found is by Jenna Zoe, and it's myhumandesign.net. She has an incredible app too. And it really is a unique blueprint for you on how your energy type came into the world and who you came here to be. And so once you really see your map, it allows you to deprogram and almost gives you the license to say, oh my gosh, that's why I've always felt a certain way about something. And it's really eye-opening and liberating to see that for yourself.
And yeah. Mel, what is your profile and how has that informed like you about yourself?
Yeah, so in human design, I am a reflector and my profile number is a 3-5. And then there's so many other, it's so detailed. And so it's not just saying like you're a Taurus or a Sagittarius, like, although astrology does play a part in it. But what it has taught me about myself, which has been really challenging. So my energy type as a reflector, the biggest challenge for me is I have to go out more and enjoy the world because the world reflects back what's in front of me. So if I'm sitting at home alone, which I love, you could leave me up on a mountain for a very long time and I don't have to see anyone. It's actually not the best way for me to activate my unique expressions that I am here to share with the world. So that's one of the big challenges for me working with my human design is I have to get out there more. But when I do that, it's so surprising at what comes back and what sparks. And so I've seen it in action.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And I know it's been a minute since I've looked up what it means to be a manifest generator, but I believe that it means that I can come up with the ideas and put them into form,
yeah,
execute them. And that is me. Like some people are better at ideating,
exactly,
and don't carry them out. And other people are happy to execute other people's ideas.
The other thing about a manifesting generator, and I know a little bit about them because Kiki is a MG as well, is just knowing and having that allowance that you don't have to be the one thing your entire life. Like you don't have to be Laura, the music journalist. You can be Laura a million things. Manifesting generators have that type of energy. And in fact, when you do whatever is inspiring you in the moment, it's the best use of your energy. It doesn't mean you're not going to come back around to the, you know, music journalism phase. It's just like, it's probably going to get you to where you want faster and with more joy and with more ease instead of being stuck and frustrated in one lane your whole life because, you know, we were programmed and told by whoever you grow up, you go to college and you do this. Manifesting generators can do it, have, yeah, such great spirit in the, in allowing yourself to do many things.
I love that. Actually, it just, it has been the truth of my life, even though there is a part of me, I think, that still identifies as a music journalist. That was such a beautiful time in my life and one of my dream jobs. But the truth is I've had many dream jobs and being an entrepreneur and doing, you know, marketing and content creation and helping other entrepreneurs share about their journeys and their stories.
Yeah.
It lights me up as much as music journalism did, you know, or does. So.
Yeah, that's great that you've been able to follow that, whereas others might, you know, have been more stuck in wondering why they're so frustrated.
Yeah, that's true. And again, it does come back to being fortunate to be able to and having the privilege to be able to pursue that because not everybody does.
Exactly. Yeah.
And Mel, if you don't mind, could we go back to, we didn't discuss this beforehand, but I know you've talked about the fact that you learned that you were adopted when you were 31.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Could you share a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I grew up in Perth, Australia with a Chinese Indonesian mom and Egyptian dad. And my whole life, I, you know, thought I was half Egyptian, which I thought was really cool.
That is pretty cool.
So I really identified with that. And when I was moving to America, I wanted to renew my passport so that, you know, I had the visa in there, in the new passport, and it would last 10 years. And I was trying to renew the visa, the passport online, and it was, the system was saying no. And so I called up the passport office and told them what was happening. And they said, sometimes there's a slight chance of human error on our end. We'll start a ticket, but in the meantime, just get a copy of your birth certificate. So I did. And that's when I found out that I got a copy of my birth certificate with the adoption papers. And that's when I found out, just before I moved to America.
Wow, Mel. And how did that affect you?
It didn't in the way that most people would think. I, at this point, was obviously an adult, 31 years old, a kidult, but done lots of work on myself and my relationship with people and family and my parents, and was really in a place at that point in my life where I knew that my parents had done all that they can within their capabilities of bringing me up, and I absolutely love them. And I think a lot of us, when we're growing up, don't have that understanding of our parents. So I had that adult relationship with my parents already. And so when I found out, it really really gave me the most compassion for them. And I, in my situation, and it's completely different for everyone's adoption story, but for me, I found out at my perfect time, because had I found out when I was any younger, or certainly when I had found out when I was a raging, naughty teenager, I probably would have run away from home and never returned. So, you know, I had that kind of teenage. I was like really rebellious, not great teenager. So I'm very grateful for when I found out and the way in which I did, and it just made so much, gave me so much compassion and made a lot of sense.
Wow, Mel, that's really beautiful. It sounds like, I mean, not that you should or would, but I think I've heard some stories of people who maybe felt some resentment toward their parents, their adopted parents, for not sharing something like that with them sooner, something so important. But did you have that at all, or was it just that love and maybe gratitude?
Not at all. And yeah, of course, if people have that feeling, it's completely valid, and everyone's adoption story is so, so different. But yeah, for me, I didn't have any of that feeling at all, because of the work that I had already done in holding my parents in the greatest love for all that they'd already done with me, with the tools and everything that was available to them in their time, which was so different to what we have now.
Oh, it sounds like it was, as you said, so fortuitous that you found out when you did.
Yeah, I'm sure they're super grateful for that too, because yeah, had I found out when I was a kid, it would be a completely different story.
Oh my gosh. And I know you just got back recently from a trip to Egypt where you did a little crate digging for records, because you found out recently that, was it your grandfather owned a record label?
Great-grandfather. Okay. So it was my grandma's dad. So yeah, I went on a trip to Egypt with Julie, who had organized a spiritual pilgrimage with Crotalo from Dharmanhur. And we went to some of the greatest, most ancient sites that we here have on this planet Earth. And Of course, in this lifetime, I had the family connection to Egypt as well. And I had only found out 4 years ago or so that my great-grandfather owned a record label in Egypt called Chirophon. And so with that piece of information and knowing I was headed to Egypt, it was in the plan. I was thinking, when I have a free day, I'm going to find a vintage record store and try and find some of the records he released. So on the very last day of the trip, that's exactly what I did.
That's amazing. And what a great name, Chirophon.
Oh, so cool. Coolest name. He had the coolest logo, you know, the pyramids with palm trees. It's a logo I would even see today.
Yeah, maybe you can incorporate it into something or something similar. It might inspire something.
Completely, yeah. So I was able to, I found 22 vinyl and I brought them all back and yeah, that's super amazing. Excited about that little find.
So it's again the convergence of music and a spiritual trip.
So trippy. And I guess the lesson, the great, beautiful lesson in that is I am standing proof that it's not just blood family and blood ties, right? If I'm adopted, I think about this regularly. It's how does a little Chinese Indonesian baby end up in Australia with an Egyptian father and his parents, so my grandparents, my Chinese Indonesian mom, we're all in Perth, Australia. My Egyptian grandparents were a huge part of my life growing up, so I had beautiful Egyptian food all the time. Obviously, Australia was such a huge part of my culture and Indonesia and the Asian influence. And I just so truly believe that, or know, that my soul chose this family and all those situations to inform me and give me clues into what my journey is going to be in this lifetime. Because how could my great-grandfather, who's not obviously my blood, how did he run a record label and then I had this big career in the music industry? And that was in the 1930s in Cairo. And it just doesn't make sense. It wouldn't make sense in the 3D world, but it makes complete sense to me. So yeah. It's like, oh, yeah, of course they're my family, you know. You don't have to be blood family, and it's soul. It's, you know.
It's true. That's quite incredible. I keep wondering where in my lineage is the love of music, because I kind of stand out in my family.
Interesting.
I mean, my dad likes to listen to music, but not to the extent that I just fell in love with it when I was 10 or 11. It's just given me so much connection and inspiration.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure, you know, where that originated, but my chosen family, so many of them are very steeped in music.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, it's that chosen threads. We have different kind of family friend groups that are all showing us a way.
Yeah, it's true. And even Darren, I have to shout out to our producer. You all look over there and see him now. Darren, he's an old good friend of my husband's. They used to work together. But before I even met him through Ray, we were at shows together because Darren was also a music photographer. Mm. And we actually like had a miscommunication text at a show at the Echoplex, I think it was.
Yeah.
Where he texted me by accident and I was like, Darren, are you here? And it was just such a neat connection. And that sort of thing happens a lot.
Right? It's so cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, oh my gosh, Melon, was there anything else that you wanted to share about your trip to Egypt, since it's so, you know, probably so fresh in your mind?
Yeah. If you ever get the chance to go to Egypt, do it. And I highly recommend doing it with Julie's group. She just released dates for 2023. So if you go to our website, you can check out what that is about. But the whole reason I recommend going to see it is that you just it's humbling, and you realize how small you are in the biggest context of things, and how time is just not probably linear in the way that we experience it, because some of these ancient sites and temples and structures are just so out of place for when they were built, or when history tells us that they were built. So it really gives you the sense of, well, for me, it really gave me the sense of not being the only species that exists in this multiverse.
Wow.
But yeah, it's mind-blowing, and you kind of have to be there, because being in the presence of such grand structures, one, it's, like I said, super humbling, but two, you start to ask a lot of questions.
Yeah, I can imagine. And there's a teaching that Julie shared, and I don't know if this relates to that exactly, but it keeps coming up in my life in various forms that really resonated, that I feel like we forget in our Western kind of materialistic culture. And that is that we are all alchemists who make magic in the moment, and we have everything we need like within us. It doesn't, even if we don't have a 401k retirement plan or, you know, beautiful home to live in, we have everything that we need. And that keeps coming up. I was watching David Letterman on Netflix recently interview the president of Ukraine, and he took a train there, a very modest train car with, I think, a bed and a toilet. And he just made a comment like, this is all I need. And it's all any of us need, really.
Right.
And so that just keeps coming up.
Yeah.
For me, it's such a powerful lesson.
Yes. Yeah. So I don't know if you can go to Egypt next year, do it.
I would love that. See if I can find a way to make that happen. And then the last thing, Mel, that I wanted to ask you about are your tea ceremonies. And I feel like, from what I understand, it's kind of a way for you to connect to your inner compass.
Yes.
Is that right?
Exactly, okay. Yeah. So tea came into my life through three different people in the same week. And it was in that kind of bridging phase from music to, I hadn't quite started Conscious City Guide yet, but I was doing work in the wellness and conscious lifestyle space. And I had a client up in Malibu who was building a retreat center. I was working with Rich and Julie to do the Plant Power Way, Italia retreats. And I was also doing sponsorship for Spirit Weavers Gathering, which is a beautiful women's gathering that now happens every June in Oregon. It's a gorgeous women's gathering, that one. Maybe something for you to check out. And so I had those three clients that I was working with, and they all asked me to get in contact with this tea guy, Colin Hudon from Living Tea, to either have him come to the retreat center in Malibu or come to the retreat in Italy, or supply tea for the festival at Spirit Weavers Gathering.
From three different avenues.
Yeah.
Wow.
And first of all, I was thinking, gosh, why is there only one tea guy? Who is this tea guy? And I was like, he must be really good. And anyway, so I contacted him, and now I understand why they all asked to get in touch with Colin. And it was through that tea came into my life, and at first I would just sit and go to ceremonies myself and be a receiving recipient in ceremony. And when you really connect with tea and the medicine that it has to share, you know, within weeks you've got a tea bowl and you own a teapot. It's like, how do I do this for myself? And then you start, well, I start, you know, gaining the confidence of, I poured for myself for maybe 5 years before I started pouring for anyone else. I'd maybe have one-off people come in to share tea with me, but I really didn't have the confidence myself to pour for groups, which I do now because I've been pouring tea for myself for 7-8 years now. And yeah, I do it almost every single morning, and I come into this room and it's the second thing I do every day. The first thing I do is take out the dog. So it's the second thing I do every day, and it's so important for me to create that space, especially according to my human design being a reflector, to make sure that everything that I'm feeling is mine. Mm-hmm. Because I can collect, I collect things from everyone along in my day. So I guess that's why it's so important for me, and haven't really articulated it before like that in correlation to my human design. But yeah, it makes complete sense that that's why it's important for me, because it sorts out what is mine and what's not mine.
Yeah. And when you say you didn't have the confidence, you know, there are some people that may not be aware of, you know, what might be involved that you might not feel confident about. What do you think was holding you back?
I think when you go to a ceremony, it's so beautifully reverent and serene, and for me, super impressive. And I guess the confidence in just holding that type of space.
I see. Yes.
For me. But yeah, there's also a lot of technical stuff, which our teacher Wooda of Global Tea Hut, you know, he always says, just serve the tea. You know, it doesn't matter if the water is not hot enough, or, you know, there are a million things that you could think or do wrong, quote unquote wrong. But he says that it's always more just about sharing tea with others, or having that moment for yourself. So,
yeah. I love that. Yeah. And there are different types of tea ceremonies, of course.
Yeah,
and
every culture has kind of adapted it into their own style.
It's a beautiful practice. And Mel, I guess this will be my last question. You have identified yourself as both practical and spiritual. Can you expand on that?
Yeah. I guess the best way to paint that picture is through my business and other things that I'm creating, is I'm putting physical manifestations out there, like Conscious City Guide, like the work I'm doing with Julie and Srimu,
like the plant-based cheeses, nut-based cheeses that are amazing.
They're delicious. You know, and a couple of other projects that I'm working on, right? They all have a physical sense in this world, but actually in the background, it's, for me, it's all spiritually or energetically informed. So I get a lot of my ideas and next steps and, you know, strategy, I guess to say, from an energetic or a spiritual perspective. But I come across as logical and practical and, you know, just getting things done in the material world. And I also see it as, you know, we are on planet Earth at this time, and if you, the more and more you're able to see it as some sense of a game, the more fun you can have and the more trial and error and the more playful you can be with those sorts of things. So I don't know if that really answered your question, but I guess in the background, what's the operating system is energetic and spiritual, and then the output is physical.
Yeah, that's beautiful. No, you perfectly answered it. And I apologize. There was one other thing I did want to mention or ask you about, and that is because Stories in Harmony is about sharing stories. Do you feel a power in people sharing their stories?
Oh, absolutely, because we can just learn so much from each other and also not feel so alone.
Yeah, that's such a huge part of it. And maybe somebody shares a story who's just, you know, on a similar journey or maybe something different, but they're a little further along and there's some lesson that you can pick up for your own life that can be really inspiring.
Exactly.
So, Mel, where can people find you and Conscious City Guide? I imagine just Googling it is a good way to start.
Yeah, so consciouscityguide.com is the main platform that I'm building right now. My personal Instagram is Nahaste, N-A-H-A-S-T-E. And yeah, they're the main two places.
Beautiful. Thank you so
Thank you much for having me. Us. Super grateful that you asked me.
Likewise. Thanks so much for tuning in to Stories in Harmony. If you feel more connected to the person I spoke to after the interview than you did before, then you can see the tremendous power of storytelling. If you want to share your story in a bigger way to create that sense of connection within your community and in your brand, get in touch with me via my website at lauraferrero.co or over on Instagram at lauraferrerostoryteller. Brand stories are one of the most effective tools for connecting authentically with your audience and growing your business and your brand. They create an emotional connection, they set you apart from others, and they're far more memorable than a bunch of facts and figures. What's more, they're very valuable for building that know, like, and trust factor that's so important for attracting loyal clients, customers, and fans. A huge thank you to producer Darren Kim, who produces Stories in Harmony, to James Breeman for creating the theme music, and to you for tuning in. I'd be so grateful if you could like, subscribe, and share this episode with somebody who might appreciate it. Thanks again for being here, and we'll see you next time.